Mr. Rod Mason, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Mason?
Yes, I was born on the 16th of July 1921 at New England Peterborough, which was railway-owned houses because my father was a railway man.
Could you tell us a bit about your family background and your sort of your childhood in the Peterborough area?
Well, my father and mother came from Lincolnshire. He had joined the railway during the First World War, and when I was born, he was a fireman, and soon afterwards became a driver. And finished up driving mainline trains between King's Cross and York. The houses were locally known as the barracks, in that they were five rows of terraced houses. But on the other hand, the locals were envious because you had a three-bedroomed house for a rent of something like two bob a week. And, of course, all the inhabitants were railway people, so everyone knew everyone else. And it was quite a closely knit community. Railway had provided the local church and a mission hall, and there was a sort of mechanics institute where they improved their knowledge of their trade.
Now, so your father was in regular employment. The family was reasonably comfortable. How many children were there?
I had an elder brother and a younger sister. My mother had a number of sisters, most of whom lived in the London area because they'd left Lincolnshire in those days to go into service of some sort or another. And my father's parents and brothers lived in Lincoln, they were the two places that we tended to visit as children. London always included a visit to the zoo, for example.
Was it a happy childhood?
Oh, yes. Although my father was a working man, obviously an engine driver was probably the top level of a working man's financially. And so we lived reasonably well, and eventually about 1935, he bought a house on the edge of town, and we moved into a three-bedroom semi-detached house just about the time I was coming up to leaving school.
Now, what about your education? Tell me about your education, how you did at school.
Well, I was very fortunate because being born in July, I was always the youngest in the class. And I went to the local primary school, and then I had a year at the secondary school where I took what is now the 11 plus on my 10th birthday, and went to the King's Cathedral Grammar School, Peterborough being a cathedral city, which was a very good school indeed. I was there until I was 16.
How did you do at school? I mean, was there any particular subjects you were interested in or good at?
Well, mathematics I was fairly good at. My brother was once, who also went to the same school, he was once described as a mathematical genius. He was extremely good at maths. But the maths is one of the reasons why I eventually wanted to be a navigator.
it was not just you were good at it, you enjoyed it.
Yes, well, I enjoyed school a great deal. Sport, of course, I was being always the youngest in the class, it meant that I was always in the second 11s or 15s rather than the first.
But you did play. What games?
Oh, I played cricket, rugby and hockey we took up. And hockey I found I was better at than anything else. I took the school certificate when I was 14 and took the higher school certificate on my 16th birthday. I would have liked to have gone to a university, but I couldn't possibly do it without a scholarship. And they were pretty hard to come by because the county was poor on university scholarships. And to get a state scholarship, my headmaster said, you won't get one until you're 18. You'll have to keep taking your exams again year by year. And this would mean two more years at school, which financially was not a good thing.
Now, just before we go on to moving into work, did you have any major hobbies, you know, as a child, you know, or were you, that you stand out?
Well, my brother and I, of course, with my father's job and living on the side of the railway, we were very keen on railways. I mean, I have now, for example, 300 or 400 railway books up in the bookcase upstairs. And I suppose other things like stamp collecting I was quite keen on. But nothing very elaborate.
Were you in any of the boys' organisations, Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, anything like
that? No, I think I was busy enough with school anyway. And, of course, there's plenty of activity. In those days, you had two sports afternoons, and so really there was little need to look for any other activities.
Did the school have an OTC, or were you in it?
No, my brother had been in it. They'd had one, but the Labour government in 1930-something refused to support them. And so it was disbanded in, I don't know, about early 30s.
So what was going to happen when you left? You left school at 16, which would be 37-ish, 1937?
Yes, well, I had... After I faced the difficulty of waiting if I wanted a scholarship, the headmaster said, if I should have a job come up that I think it would be worthwhile you taking, I will tell you. Otherwise, stay on and see how it goes. And almost immediately... ICI, who had a sales office in Peterborough, wanted a couple of people, and they had people to interview from all the local schools, including public schools like Oundle, Stamford, Kimbolton and such like. And anyway, I got one of the two jobs, so the headmaster was extremely pleased because it was good for him, and so I started at soon after my 16th birthday as a office boy, cook and bottle washer sort of thing, and you know, did mostly the filing and telephone answering.
This at the ICI offices.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what was the work like? Did you enjoy it? This is the 37.
Well, yes, it was enjoyable. They were, in fact, very, very friendly. The office manager was, as a matter of fact, Sid Buckley, who, if you've ever read The Escaping Club, escaped from Germany in the First World War, and was a very good character indeed.
What was he like?
Well, he was fatherly to me, anyway. And ICI in those days, I always said that it was made up of unsuccessful undergraduates, in that they most of the people who had been to university hadn't got degrees, but they had a very good social life. And of course, the one thing that you'd got to do in a sales office was be able to drink and entertain customers. So it was a very friendly atmosphere.
And so your duty was just general office duties?
Yes. Then when I was 17, I think before I was 17 and a half, I joined the local territorial army.
Now, tell me about that. How did you actually come to join?
Well, at that time, I think any thinking person realised there was a very strong chance of a war coming up. I played rugby for the Peterborough town, and a lot of the rugby club members belonged to the TA, and the arts master at King's School was in fact a company commander in the Northamptonshire Regiment.
Now, which battalion was it?
It was the 5th Battalion.
Where did they train?
Well, they had a drill hall, which was at the north end of the town where I lived, so that was fairly easy.
Do you know the drill hall's name?
Just the drill hall.
Peterborough drill hall. drill hall, yeah.
But the 5th Northamptonshire, 5th Battalion Northamptonshire Regiment was originally the 5th Battalion included what had been the Huntingdonshire battalions in the First World War. And I joined the intelligence section, which was a section of a sergeant and six men, which, in theory, a territorial unit didn't have in peacetime. But they had it and used it really as an officer training unit.
Now, so, do you remember the interview before you got it? You know, so what was the actual procedure of joining? Do you remember?
Well, I think it was so easy. I just went in and signed my name and got issued with the equipment. I don't think there was any problem. It was almost like a club, you know. If you were known, you were welcome.
And you were joining as a prospective officer, but you were joining as a private.
I joined as a private, yes.
And you were Intelligence Section 8, Headquarters Company, I presume.
Headquarters Company, yes.
And what about, could you take us through the type of training you got on the drill night?
Well, the Intelligence Section mainly was involved in sort of mapping out ground, sketching what you could see from particular points. We also did some weapons training. I spent a lot of time helping the Bren gun instructor, so I did a certain amount of Bren gun instruction.
Take us through these things one more. I know it's but what about the mapping? The map training. How did that start?
Well, you would take a 1-inch map and go out somewhere into the countryside and do an enlargement of the map to show the sort of things that people would need to know if they were going to attack over it. Brooks and ditches and hedges that wouldn't appear on the 1-inch map, and a sketch of what they were going to see ahead of them.
A panoramic sketch.
Yes. That was the sort of thing.
And the weapons training, how did they firstly, did you do a drill course?
Everyone did a certain amount of drill, and of course you took your rifle out to the local rifle range. And
how did you take to drill? I mean, it was your first time you'd done it, presumably.
Not badly, but A bit left-footedly.
Did you understand the point of it at the time? You might do now, but at the time, did you see it as something with a point, or was it?
Oh yes. Well, I think it's very hard for people to realise now what it was like around 1937. War by then seemed pretty inevitable, and I think a lot of people made their mind up whether they were going to be involved or not. You knew that you would be involved eventually, but did you do it voluntarily and choose what you did, or wait to be compelled?
I should have asked, what was the actual date you joined the battalion, roughly?
I would think about September 37. September 37.
So before Munich?
Not 37. 38.
At the time of Munich, that sounds more likely.
38. Yes, because you've got to be, I think the official age was 17 and a half, and I was in just before that.
So you were very aware of the approach of war?
Yes, as if I go on from there.
What about the weapons training? Can you talk a bit about that?
Well,
did you do at the rifle course?
Quite good. I enjoyed the range quite a bit. And as I say, the Bren gun, somehow or other, I got.
Was it the Bren or was it the Lewis?
No, the Bren. The Bren, you know, was the latest thing. The point about the this battalion, and in fact the division, it was part of the 48th Division. This was the first territorial unit to go to France, and it was considered a trained division, as opposed to most territorial units, which still had a way to go before they were considered first line troops.
And you were aware of this?
Oh yes, they were very proud of their position. Now, having joined them in 38, in 39 I went off to camp with them. In July we went to Arundel and camped in the park. And
what was the camp like?
Well, the weather was good, very enjoyable. It was a tented camp, obviously, and we marched about and did a bit more drill and various exercises.
What kind of exercise?
Well, really looking at the ground, assessing the ground, and doing fictitious advances or whatever.
This was July?
This was July.
And you were still sort of under training as a prospective officer, basically. You know, the intelligence corps was seen as that.
Yes, the sort of, we probably covered more than was necessary as far as the sort of books and things that we got involved in. The manuals, I would rather put them books, the manuals. But we then come to an interesting situation in that I wanted to join the Air Force. I was keen on the Air Force. I got a lot of friends who had left school at about the same time, who were older than me, had joined the Air Force, and I wanted to be an observer. And
this is because of your interest in navigation.
I was interested in navigation. And you couldn't join the Air Force then until you were 18. And so in July 1939, I applied to join the Air Force. And I applied for a short service commission, which would be a pilot's, as a pilot. There were only two trades, pilot or observer. But on the advice of one of my friends, I was told the quickest way to get observer training was to apply to be apply for a short service commission. And when they realised how poor I was, they would say, would you like to be a sergeant's observer? Which they did. And I was due to begin my observer training, or my RAF training, on the 15th of September 1939.
So you were joining as a regular? Or
yes.
Do you remember anything about the interviews or the sort of selection procedure? You were applying, you know, you were as far as I was concerned, you were applying to be a pilot.
Yes, well, you...
At what point,
you see, the medical intelligence and so on were all the same. And then you finished up with a panel of about four people who asked about your background. And as my friend had told me, who had followed the same route, they sort of said, well, you know, we'd rather... would you be interested in being an observer? And of course, I said yes.
Which is what you'd wanted all the time.
Which was what I really wanted anyway.
Did the loss of the prospect of a commission rank trouble you?
I wasn't all that mad about a commission. No, I felt sergeant observer was more my level anyway, which will recur later on in my story.
What did your parents think of you applying? You know, to join because the war hadn't started.
They slightly thought I was mad, but they, you know, their attitude, it was up to me.
And what about your employers?
Well, I resigned from ICI with effect from the end of August. But...
A bit of a step.
Yes, it was really. But on the 1st of September... The Territorial Army insisted that I go and join them. And, of course, they had got to agree to my transfer to the RAF, which they didn't. They said, you're untrained in the RAF, but you're trained in the Army, therefore you must stay in the Army. So I reported on the 1st of September, and within a few days we moved to Swindon.
Now, what were you doing during the few days? You know, what was at the drill hall you'd been
called? Yeah, yes. Well, just, you know, collecting gear and it was just really a collection point, and we then went off to Swindon.
Whereabouts in Swindon?
Well, we were in, I think it was the Wesleyan Chapel. And we were there for about a month.
And what exactly were you doing? Well, what were the billets like first, the chapel billets?
Well, you know, we all sort of had palliasses that we just lay all over the floor and... The food was cooked in the station yard and was brought out on the back of a lorry, and it was reasonable, but you know, not luxury by any means.
And what sort of training were you doing?
Well, we spent most of our time route marching, because obviously the thing, we've got to get fit enough to go marching across the roads of France.
Now, can you give us an idea what a typical route march would be like, you know, around the countryside, around Swindon, if there is any countryside around Swindon, but, you know, and how the people would react, and what was it like, and the drill?
Well, we'd march out, probably do 5 or 6 miles, go out of the town, out in the loop, and back again, and I know our sergeant major always used to sort of tell us to look smart and cheerful, because he said these poor buggers are watching you, think you're going to win the war for them. And he was quite a character. And then, of course, you had sentry duties. I mean,
on the march, automatically. Stick it to the march. Would they have the old army thing of 10 minutes in each hour off? You know,
yes,
rest?
Yes. And of course, we had a band. We had a drum and fife band, which headed the thing. Which
what would they be playing?
All the marches you can think of, really.
Not popular songs.
No. They would be. They'd go through their repertoire of marches mainly.
Was that inspirational or?
Well, it kept you cheerful and kept you in step. That was.
Was there any
thing.
Singing on the march? I mean, singing songs amongst the men.
We occasionally might have a bit of a sing song to keep us going, but not a great deal.
Right, sorry, to carry on with what you'd started
we
saying.
Also had quite a bit of sport. I know I used to play rugby one afternoon and hockey another afternoon.
For the battalion or
for the battalion. I had to play hockey because the colonel played centre forward and the sergeant major played inside left and I was outside left, so I had to report for hockey. Of course, hockey was played in India, and the Northamptons had always had a battalion in India from the First World War, so they were very keen on hockey.
Was this business of inter-rank sport? I mean, did people take it out on the, hack his legs a bit, or?
Oh, no. It was, it used to be very, very friendly, and
Would you speak to, how would he speak to you? You know, you're playing for the same team, there's a camaraderie there. I mean, were you allowed to speak to him?
Oh, yes, no, and, he would, he would be rude to me, but I obviously wouldn't be rude back.
And anything else you were doing at that time in Swindon? You were there till about a month, into October anyway.
Well, we were really just concentrated there, and then whichever day, about the beginning of October or about the last day of September or 1st of October, they were ordered off to France. And so we paraded the night before, and I and one other person in the headquarters company were called out and told we were too young to go out of the country. You weren't allowed to leave the country until you were 19. And so after all this, I couldn't go anyway.
How did you feel about that?
Very depressed, because obviously I knew all these people, and what was I going to do now? So I was posted to a second line unit, which was the 4th Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment, who were at Aldershot. And from being in a trained unit, I went to an untrained unit. I was about the only trained man there, because they were mainly people who had joined the TA to avoid conscription. When conscription came in at the beginning of 1939, if you joined the TA, you didn't have to go into the services. You were able to do your conscription with the TA. So, of course, hundreds of people joined up immediately, and this battalion was based on Northampton, and they had a whole range of people. And I was, to say the least, unwelcome.